Hello, my friends. Welcome to the Hello Tomorrow podcast, where we make sense of what's next in 20 minutes every week. I'm your host, Josh Allen Dykstra. As always, I'm going to do my best to cut through the noise and expose the systems shaping our future. Our goal is to leave here with more clarity and a little bit of optimistic rebellion. Today's episode is a little quieter, a little deeper. I think it matters a lot. I want to start with something that made me laugh at myself. A few days ago, I asked AI to summarize an article for me. That's not the funny part. If you've been hanging out with me for any length of time, you know my current perspective is that AI is something we need to learn. And for certain kinds of work, not using LLMs would be as silly as trying to build your house without using power tools. Now, to do what I do, for example, I need to synthesize a lot of information all the time. LLMs, really helpful with this. This article, I asked it to summarize. It was an article about how speed has become more important than depth. It took me a second, but I got the irony. I didn't ask AI to help because I don't value depth. I did it because it felt like I had to. I've got deadlines and commitments. I got kids to pick up from school, an endless to-do list. That isn't just me, of course. This is the environment we're all operating in. A world where slowing down feels irresponsible, where reading something carefully feels kind of indulgent, or where pausing feels like falling behind. Now, that's when the real insight hit me. Systems only reward what they can measure, and our current system cannot measure pause. Now, that single fact, I think, explains a lot about what we're feeling and why it feels so broken right now. The article that catalyzed this episode was published a couple weeks ago by tech writer Om Malik, where he names the problem with some brutal clarity. We built machines that prize acceleration and then act puzzled that everything feels rushed and slightly manic. Our world, of course, is now largely governed by machines. We exist inside the containers and boxes our calendars show. We're at the Pavlovian mercy of our phone notifications. We are, as others have pointed out, already cyborgs, emotionally, if not physically, unable to detach ourselves from our technology. For these machines, speed isn't a side effect. It's their organizing value. Now, let's just look at what this produces. It looks like news cycles that reward volume over accuracy. You know, flood the zone. Put out 10 stories in the time it takes to verify one. By the time a correction appears, 5 new headlines have already replaced it in the feed. Speed creates volume. Volume creates confusion. This also looks like products that are shipped before they're ready, because launch and iterate is now beating test and refine. And that might be fine for a social media app, but what about when it's medical devices or bridges or airplanes? The 737 MAX, that wasn't a failure of intelligence, it was a failure of restraint. This also looks like decisions that are made inside Slack threads, 47 messages in 12 minutes, because moving fast looks like competence. Move fast and break things, y'all. But hold up, wait a minute, I need to think about this. That kind of looks like weakness. None of this is hypothetical. This is just Tuesday, right? When speed becomes the goal, anything that slows us down feels dangerous. Now, here's another quote from Om. Once velocity is the prize, quality becomes risky. Thoughtfulness takes time. Reporting takes time. Living with a product or an idea takes time. Yet the window for relevance keeps shrinking, and the penalty for lateness is erasure. We get a culture optimized for first takes, not best takes. Oh, that last line, first takes, not best takes, that's not a moral critique. That's about incentives. If lateness means you get erased, hesitation feels like an existential risk. And if our attention windows keep shrinking, nuance becomes more and more of a liability. All right, another line from Om. This might be his most important one for me. When attention is fragmented and speed becomes the dominant value, media rearranges itself around that reality, not because anyone wakes up wanting to mislead people, but because the context makes some paths survivable and others impossible. And we talked a little bit about this last week. This is how systems create outcomes without villains. There's no conspiracy. There's no evil masterminds. There's just incentives that quietly reshape behavior until certain choices disappear from view. Truth doesn't die. It just becomes non-viable. All right, one more thought from home. The cost of all this isn't abstract. It's the review that took 3 months, but no one will read. It's the investigation that required patience. It's the work of understanding something before declaring judgment. All of it still exists, still gets made. It just doesn't travel. And in a system where only what travels matters, we've made expertise indistinguishable from noise. Damn. That line. In a system where only what travels matters, we've made expertise indistinguishable from noise. Whew. You know what doesn't travel well? Patience, restraint, uncertainty, careful judgment, wisdom. All those things still exist. But remember, in a system where only travel matters, invisibility is basically irrelevance. So things like wisdom don't travel because wisdom requires context. You can't screenshot nuance. You can't tweet restraint. You can't make a viral clip out of, I need more information before I decide. It also doesn't travel because wisdom takes time. A carefully considered argument takes, 2,000 words? A hot take takes 200 characters. The algorithm doesn't care which one is true, it cares which one moves. Wisdom doesn't travel also because it actually requires uncertainty. Uncertainty isn't really optional in wisdom, but uncertainty doesn't perform well in the scroll, right? I'm not sure yet gets crushed by I'm absolutely certain, even when the certain person is dead freaking wrong. So the system does what systems do. It selects for what survives. And wisdom doesn't survive this kind of velocity. This brings me to a story. Right out of college, I worked at Mix 100.3 FM in Denver, the best mix of the 80s, 90s, and today. Oh, yeah. I started in marketing and promotions, but due to the kindness and support of a fabulous program director, thank you, Ron, and really just everybody on the team, Mark, Giff, Murph, I love all you guys. I eventually got to work my way to being on air. And in radio, if you don't know, there's one unforgivable sin. Dead air. Silence means panic. Silence means you seriously effed something up. Silence means the audience is gone. So if you're on air, you learn professionally to fill space at all costs. Talk over your thoughts. Never let a beat land too long. Always keep the sound moving. So after I told my LLM to summarize Ohm's article, I realized we didn't just train DJs this way. We've trained our entire frickin' culture. Silence now feels like disengagement. Delayed replies feel like incompetence. Pausing before speaking feels risky. We've built a whole world that despises dead air. And the system responds the same way radio did. Fill it now. This is where our society is really missing the plot. We're talking somewhat endlessly about intelligence right now, right? Artificial intelligence versus human intelligence and collective intelligence, machine intelligence. But intelligence, it's just not the limiting factor anymore. Wisdom is. And across history, wisdom has meant something very specific. Not knowing more, not moving faster. It's about knowing when not to act. As Daniel Schmachtenberger says, pretty much any definition of wisdom that anybody offers has restraint as an embedded concept. Wisdom involves what not to do, where you could have personal advantage, where you could have some near-term advantage, but it's actually not the right thing to do. And that's the core of it. Wisdom equals power plus restraint. Now, let me be specific about why the distinction between intelligence and wisdom matters so much right now. Intelligence is about solving problems, but wisdom is about knowing which problems to solve. Intelligence asks, can we do this? Wisdom asks, should we do that? Intelligence optimizes for outcomes. Wisdom accounts for consequences. If promises hold up, AI will make us radically more intelligent. We are building technology that can process millions of data points instantly, generate solutions we'd never think of, automate decisions at literally inhuman speed. But none of that is wisdom. AI can optimize, but it can't restrain. AI can solve, but it can't know what to solve. AI can act, and soon it will act at scale, but it can't know when not to act. You see what I'm saying? This means the gap between intelligence and wisdom is about to become a chasm. And historically, that chasm has a name: catastrophe. Here's the big system problem that's widening the canyon. Our systems can measure movement, but they can't measure restraint. Right? They can't see the email you didn't send, the decision you delayed, the advantage you chose not to take. Those are the places that wisdom lives. But according to our speed-based system, those things get a score of zero. Now, these insights aren't new, of course. They're actually quite ancient. I want to explore three examples. All right, first, from Stoicism. Marcus Aurelius ruled an empire and still wrote, "You have power over your mind, not outside events." Here's what makes Stoicism brilliant as a system. It doesn't say care less. It just says direct your energy where you have agency. Stoicism asks, what can I actually control? I don't have control over the project getting derailed, but I can help determine what our team does next. I don't have control over a market crash, but I can determine my response to it. I don't have control over receiving that email that pissed me off, but I can determine whether I reply immediately or wait an hour. It's saying I refuse to spend energy on things I can't change, because that energy is finite and I'd rather spend it where it matters. So showing restraint is wisdom. Our second bit of ancient wisdom comes from Taoism. Taoism gives us one of my favorite sayings: don't push the river. Taoism can get misread as passive. It's not. It's about reading systems well enough to know when intervention actually makes things worse. Like, you wake up some mornings with energy, clarity, focus. Everything flows. Other mornings, you wake up in a fog and can barely think. You didn't do anything different. Your body just has its own rhythms that you don't fully control. Circadian, hormonal, kind of mysterious. You can fight it. You can chug that coffee. Force yourself through those tasks that require sharpness when you don't have it. Push the river. Or you can read the conditions and adjust. You save deep work for when your brain is sharp. Do admin when it's foggy. Answer emails. Organize files. Let the work match the energy you actually have, not the energy you wish you had. Don't push the river doesn't mean don't act. It means work with the flow you're in, not against it. It's not anti-action, it's anti-forcing. It's knowing when effort creates flow and when effort breaks the flow. Not trying to push a river is wisdom. All right, our third example comes from Judaism, the Sabbath. The Sabbath isn't a vibe, it's system design. Here's what ancient cultures understood that we've kind of forgotten. We humans don't generally stop on our own. We, given our option, we'll always do one more thing. We're going to swipe to another video, do one more scroll, answer one more email. So the Sabbath doesn't suggest rest. It mandates it. Not optional. Sacred. A mandatory pause. No productivity, no optimization. Why? Because ancient cultures already knew this. If we don't structurally protect pause, acceleration devours everything. 3,000 years later, we're proving them right. Scheduling breaks is wisdom. Now, here's what makes this moment now uniquely dangerous. We have unprecedented power, unprecedented speed, and almost no restraint. AI accelerates capability, but really does nothing to accelerate wisdom. So very old human temptations get amplified. Short-term advantages, dominance, extraction, reaction. And all this happens at machine scale. Let's make this more concrete. Right now, a 19-year-old with a laptop and an LLM can generate a disinformation campaign that can reach millions of people. They could create deepfake videos that are indistinguishable from reality. They could write code that could crash financial systems. They could produce deeply persuasive and personalized propaganda. None of this is science fiction. This is all happening right now. None of those things require wisdom. They just require access. We've democratized intelligence without teaching restraint. And the gap between what we can do and what we should do has never been wider. That's not a technology problem, that's a wisdom problem. And this is the pattern I keep seeing. We've talked about this with economics, with debt, with AI, with capitalism itself. We're solving problems that create bigger problems, right? We're letting the market try to solve problems that market dynamics actually make worse. We're using more debt to dig ourselves deeper into a hole that's going to be really hard to escape from. We're automating jobs without thinking about what people do for income when the work disappears. Every solution becomes the next crisis, not because we're stupid, but because we're intelligent without being wise. Intelligence solves a problem in front of you. Wisdom asks, what problem will solving this create? We've completely failed to heed the warnings of the inimitable Jeff Goldblum. We are so focused on can we that we've stopped asking should we? Do you remember that scene from Jurassic Park? I looked it up because it's been a while. I swear, today it feels like Dr. Malcolm is talking directly to Sam Altman or somebody. Here, you watch.
I'll tell you the problem with the scientific power that you're using here. It didn't require any discipline to attain it. You know, you read what others had done, and you took the next step. You didn't earn the knowledge for yourselves, so you don't take any responsibility for it. You stood on the shoulders of geniuses to accomplish something as fast as you could, and before you even knew what you had, you patented it and packaged it and slapped it on a plastic lunchbox, and now you're selling it. You want to sell it. Well,
I don't think you're giving us our due credit. Our scientists have done things which nobody's ever done before.
Yeah, but your scientists were so preoccupied with whether or not they could, they didn't stop to think if they should.
That's the wisdom deficit, right? It was dangerous when resurrecting dinosaurs, and it's even more dangerous here in real life. So what do we do about this? A few years ago, I helped lead a small tech company where we asked a really simple question. Can you actually learn how to enjoy work? Knowing how much time everybody spends in a job, we wondered, is it possible to teach greater enjoyment of work? Like, you could learn a sport or learn to play an instrument. Could you learn to love work? Turns out, the answer is largely yes. And a key part of work enjoyment is, you may have guessed it, cultivating wisdom. But how do we do that? One of the biggest ingredients isn't motivation or perks, it's space. We need more space in our lives. And here's the hard truth, we're unlikely to find space. The system believes space is failure. It believes its job is to fill the dead air. So space must be made. It must be cultivated like a garden, protected like an heirloom, something that really matters to you. And here's what I'm realizing. Space is the language of the rebellion. So how do we make space? Well, if you're able to, start scheduling it. This feels strange at first, but it quickly becomes really restorative. Put it on your calendar. Time for a walk, time to read, time outside, time for a bath, time for yourself. Now, depending on your life stage, that can be harder or easier to do. So there's one thing we can all do because it's a micro practice. And this isn't theory. This is something I have seen change how people experience their days. In our app, we called this practice, pause and get curious. Viktor Frankl said, between stimulus and response, there's a space. In that space is our power to choose our response. We can all practice this in the spaces and moments that we have throughout our day. So what you do is in the moment before you react, you pause and get curious instead. That is what building wisdom actually feels like. Now, the impact of a pause is hard to measure, but we feel its power whenever we do it. The system will probably never account for it. I'm pretty sure that's why it matters so much. Now, this week, the optimistic rebellion is to practice pausing and getting curious. in the moment, take a moment. Create space. Don't rush. Try moving through your life just maybe 5% more slowly. Give yourself margins. When you pause, let yourself get curious about what's happening. Now, this is simple to understand, but at least for me, this takes a lot of practice. So here's the rule. When you feel that urgency, which is exactly when the system wants you to react, give yourself 10 seconds to respond instead. Respond, not react. One breath in, one breath out, then get curious. We can practice this together. I did go back and read Ohm's article, by the way, slowly and with care. It took a while, but that felt like the point. As I'm learning something simple but surprisingly hard. Wisdom doesn't sprint. It usually doesn't trend. It doesn't travel fast. It pauses. Even if the system never learns how to measure that. If I can help your leaders or your organization make sense of what's next, come find me, joshallan.com, joshallan.com. Thanks for listening. See you next week.